Fáilte chuig Fiosrucht agus Foghlaim, a podcast from Hibernia College, exploring the ideas, stories and experiences shaping education today. I'm your host, Fiona McArdle. For our very first episode, I'm delighted to be joined by my fellow edgy researcher, educator and children's literature enthusiast, Emma Farraher. Today, we're talking about something close to both our hearts, children's books. The stories that stay with us spark curiosity and imagination and help children understand themselves, others and the world around them. Before we get started, I have to admit something. I have always been a complete bookworm. As a child, I used to sneak out of bed at night with a book tucked under my arm and read by the light coming down the hallway just because I couldn't put the story down. My poor mum and dad probably thought I was asleep, but I'd be lost in another world instead. So I grew up devouring everything from Roald Dahl to Enid Blyton's The Faraway Tree, The Babysitter's Club, Choose Your Own Adventure books, and when I got a little older, Goosebumps. So looking back, it's probably no surprise that almost every one of my school reports said something along the lines of Fiona is capable of great work if only she'd take her head out of the book and pay attention. But thankfully I didn't. That lifelong love of reading has stayed with me and it's one of the reasons I'm really excited about today's conversation. It's also why I was so honoured to collaborate with Children's Books Ireland on our Share a Story guide, which explores the power of intergenerational reading and storytelling. It's a free resource that's available to download online, so if you're interested in bringing generations together through books, I'd really encourage you to have a look. Books have this incredible ability to transport us, spark our imagination, build empathy and create memories that stay with us for a lifetime. And today's guest has dedicated so much of her work to helping children discover the same magic. So let's dive in. Every reader has an origin story. Emma, I'd love to begin by getting to know you a little bit more. Can you tell us about yourself and your journey into education?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me. And that was such a gorgeous intro. I could relate to so much of it. So we'll unpack that more as we chat.
Great.
But I'm a primary teacher. I graduated from St. Patrick's College, Drumcondra, in 2014. And I actually wasn't sure I wanted to be a teacher. I loved my time in Pats. But after some soul searching, I said I'll sub for a year. And then I ended up loving it. So once I got settled and a few years had passed, I said I'd like to do a master's. And I did my master's in literacy education and that just changed my career. It was just the best 2 years of my life. I learned so much and I really fell into that sort of children's literature space as a result. And then rather than, you know, taking what I learned and going to the classroom, I joined DCU as a teacher fellow and then as a lecturer on the literacy team and now back to the classroom. So that's it, a whistle-stop tour of my journey in education.
And can you remember, just off the top of your head, a book maybe that stayed with you from childhood? I mean, I'm always talking about Enid Blyton, The Faraway Tree, but was there a book that has stayed with you through childhood and what made it unforgettable?
I wouldn't say it was just one book. I would say it was a collection of books. So I loved Jacqueline Wilson's books growing up. The first one I bought was Vicky Angel and I bought it because the title was pink and I just completely disregarded the cover. Yeah, it was all about the optics. I judged the book by its cover.
Yeah.
But those stories just, I suppose, let me experience other worlds that I wouldn't have experienced. And I remember I used to get so upset for the characters, but to the point where I would go to my parents in tears because I'd be going, this girl's mother is really ill, or, you know, this girl was, you know, she's someone's died, or things I hadn't really experienced. And I was so actually overwhelmed by those books. But when I look back on it now, I think, oh my goodness, what an amazing, I suppose, gift that you're able to kind of empathise with those characters because I hadn't had those experiences.
Yeah.
So I always remember Jacqueline Wilson's books for that.
And how has your relationship with children's literature evolved throughout your career?
I've always loved children's literature. Even when I was in school, in secondary school, I would do art projects and I'd always bring in picture books and illustration. But I worked with a teacher called Diane Steen and she was just phenomenal. I had moved from infants up to sixth class and Diane showed me that everything I did in an infant classroom could work in the senior classroom and that there were picture books for that age group too. So she used to come into me all the time and drop books on my desk, and I just really caught the bug from her. So I suppose from a practice perspective, Diane had a huge influence on me. But then when I did the master's in literacy, we did a lot on children's literature. And then I found, oh my goodness, there's an academic world here too. There's so much. I haven't even scratched the surface. And really? It was great to be able to, I suppose, engage with research on that. It's such a gift to be able to engage with research on things that you genuinely love. So that's where I'm at now, reading the research.
We're deep in research. Yeah. Oh, what makes children's literature, I suppose, such a powerful educational tool? You mentioned there on Jacqueline Wilson, and I suppose that developed or brought empathy and different emotions in for you. Like, would you say it's emotions, or are there any other kind of powerful tools that you can gain through children's literature?
I think there's so many things that, you know, you can gain from engaging with children's literature. I think the primary thing for me would be the lenses into different worlds. Mm. I think that's so powerful. You know, I think that's why as a teacher you need to be so conscious of making sure that you're representing lots of different stories in your library, you know. And I think you can attack so many different themes and topics through picture books too. So, you know, they're a great cross-curricular resource, you know. I was actually reading The Heart and the Bottle there by Oliver Jeffers recently. And it's a book that I always had in my stack, but I never really used it. And I was flicking through it, and there's a really poignant image of an empty chair, and the book is about loss. And I remember I had such a visceral reaction to it. Really? And I thought, my goodness, thank God I didn't pull this out in front of 30 kids. Mm. But, you know, if you ever were looking to have a conversation around loss or grief, maybe that image might be a catalyst. Mm. Or if you look at, say, The Name Jar. That's a book about a child who's bullied because of her name. And there's a gorgeous, well, I say gorgeous, I think it's more that it's evocative. It's a double page spread. And the children are on the bus, and there's obviously, you can tell that there's a tense situation. Mm. Definitely speaks to the theme of bullying. I just said it's a gorgeous double page spread, but I meant I like the artwork. But that's a powerful sort of catalyst for talking about bullying. Absolutely, so, you know, there's lots of opportunity there for bringing those conversations into the classroom, but letting the children to sort of, I guess, reason with what they're seeing, as opposed to you delivering the punchline. Do you know that bullies are bad?
And like for student teachers listening to this or wondering about lessons that they could develop on school placement, I think you really hit the nail on the head there. Like just sometimes having that stimulus, showing the image of the bus and like reading it. Do you think this is a happy situation? Is it a tense? And yes, it can be a gorgeous picture, and listening to them, letting them just have, you know, that kind of critical thinking on what they're seeing. And you really hit on something there. I loved, like you said, how books, you know, the different lenses. And I thought of a saying, I suppose, like from diversity perspective with literature, you can't be what you can't see. So to really, for all teachers, to really look at the books that they're having and the representation, I suppose, within the classroom context is so important.
But even for us as researchers, you know, I always think there's been so many people whose work I've read where I can see myself in their work, and it makes me go, oh, maybe I belong here too, because I'm still at that early stage. So it doesn't change, you know, different type of text, but it's the same principle.
I see you as Miss Honey, if I was to put you as a character. You're definitely, I had it written down here, so I was like, Miss Honey is coming in for our podcast.
I'm so glad that this is recorded, because I say there's people listening to this and laughing.
Well, it's true. So we've talked a little bit about how children develop, I suppose, empathy and belonging and understanding through books. And there's actually another one that popped into my head. I don't know if you came across The Huge Bag of Worries. It's beautiful just for children. And I suppose, especially during the pandemic, children who had those low levels of anxiety, The Huge Book of Worries was a great little nugget to share. And just how it's depicted, the illustrations were gorgeous as well. So, I mean, there's so many tools here that, as you said, teachers can bring into the classroom. What do you think separates a memorable story from one that truly transforms learning?
I think that's a tricky one. Mm. I think that you could read a story to a class full of 30 children, and some of the children will probably not listen. Some of them will feel that it was transformative, and others will feel it was memorable. And I think it's whatever lens they're already bringing to it. But I think if the children can see themselves in the story,
yeah,
that's definitely something that's powerful. I think stories where, you know, the teacher is able to, I suppose, elicit a conversation that, you know, everyone gets drawn into, whether that's using the images, whether it's just discussing part of the plot. There's a, like, lovely community building, you know, potential when you're reading a story. So I think it might be the experience of actually reading the story that can be transformative. I think it's hard to kind of pinpoint what makes a story transformative in itself, because I think it's so dependent on the reader.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, that would be my thinking.
And if a teacher was choosing a story from your rich experience and from research, how can teachers move beyond simply just reading a story in the class and classroom to creating that really rich classroom experience?
I think slowing down, I suppose, to ask the right questions or to let the children wonder. Yes. I think the teacher thinking aloud is a powerful, you know, teacher move in itself, to show how you were thinking about the story, to show, I suppose, the connections that you were making. If there's images, I'm a huge advocate for slowing down and looking at the images, because oftentimes the images are telling an adjacent story or maybe a contradictory story, and there might be a whole other narrative or hidden message. And sometimes we might read a story on the surface and we miss out on that. Yeah. Like if you think of Stuck by Oliver Jeffers,
yeah,
if you just read the text, you're reading one story. It's very humorous, a little bit ridiculous. But then if you look at the pictures, there's a really deep message about the environment. There's lots of intertextuality there. We've got like a throwback to The Giving Tree. Like it's very rich. But if you were to only read the text, you're missing out on all of that.
Yeah. And if there was, I suppose, a student teacher wondering, how will I bring a story into the classroom, or where do I start? I'm at the beginning of my teaching journey here. I don't know how to read this text, let's say the twits, or what would you recommend? What would the starting point be?
Well, first of all, I would say let yourself be a learner. I feel like we're learning all the time. I would say never go into a classroom without reading the text yourself. Throwing back there to that hearth in the bottle anecdote, make sure that you've read the text yourself. I love a transparent sticky note and I make little notes for myself. So what kind of questions could I ask? I plan my think alouds. So I'll actually jot them down so that I'm not going off on a tangent, because I do feel, as much as we want to have discussions around the book, you don't want the teacher doing all the talking. You want to bring the kids in.
Yeah.
And John Hattie says that teachers talk for 80% of the time, and I could be that person if I didn't scaffold myself with a few sticky notes.
Yeah.
So I would just say, you know, give yourself grace, bring in your sticky notes and give yourself time to plan. You don't need to read 5 chapters in a day. Do you know, a little bit of text and that is read and discussed in a rich way, I think there's more learning to be gleaned from that.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, for anyone listening as well, I think you learn as you go. I remember my first year out teaching, I started reading The Witches by Roald Dahl to my class at around Halloween time, selfishly because I still love the story as an adult and I wanted to. But I found it was just, at the end of the day, it was something. I grew up in primary school. We always had our lave or lair at the end of the day. I went to a girls' school, but we'd have a little novel and it was just such a lovely soothing part. So I brought it into the classroom. And I remember at a parent-teacher meeting, one of the moms said to me, she was like, oh, like my little girl loves that you read to her at the end of the day. And it's only as it kind of progressed in teaching then I realised like not a lot of children have that gift of being read to, like my mum would have read to me at night time, and then obviously independent reading. So that love for reading was fostered very early, whereas now I suppose techie, iPads, it's a different kind of generation. Not every child has someone to read to them. So it's just, you know, and then obviously we can get a bit carried away. I remember when I was reading The Witches, I put gloves on and started scratching my head, obviously, because I wanted them to think I was a witch, you know, and just the excitement. Too far with the drama. Like, but I just said, this is so much fun. You can bring in your own ways into the classroom and to foster that love of literature so early on. Like,
can I tack something on there?
Please.
I also think that it's no, I think there's people who probably wouldn't agree with me here. If you're reading a book to a class and they're not loving it and you're not loving it, I think it's cool to, you know, model, you know, we're not feeling this.
Drop.
I'm going to put this in the library. So if you'd like to read it, you can pick it up and let's read a few first chapters and vote on our next book. But to model that notion that if you don't like this, you can put it down.
That's
because
brilliant.
That's how I read as an adult. And that's one thing I'll say, my parents really nurtured that.
Yeah.
They never made me feel bad if I didn't finish a book, even if they'd bought loads. Sorry, Mum and Dad. But they would have bought me series and sometimes they wouldn't have made it past the first book.
Yeah.
But I never had that guilt.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, Emma and I are studying at the moment, so we've been deep in journals, haven't we, Emma, for the past year. So I've said this next couple of weeks is really going to focus on, you know, some nice books. But like that, I'm choosing ones I like. I'll pick it up. So it's great advice. The same for teachers, same for your class. If they don't like it, let it go. Are there any misconceptions about children's literature that you'd love to challenge?
I think, oh, there's probably so many, but I think the main one would be that picture books are for younger learners only. I think they are one of the richest resources you can use with older learners and adults. I think there's a lot to be gleaned from discussing an image. I keep going back to the image.
Mm-hmm.
I also think graphic novels are incredible because you have to do so much work, I suppose, between the panels. You know, you might look at a graphic novel and say, well, there's not actually a lot of text there. There's a lot of critical thinking. There's a lot of room for interpretation. There's a lot of room for, I suppose, having conversations about what something might mean. And that is teaching children, I guess, you know, that you can have different perspectives on something and that they're equally valid and that they can coexist. So I'm a huge advocate for a graphic novel.
And if you could change one thing about how children's literature is used in schools, what would it be? And not necessarily change, I suppose that's a strong, but like change, improve, introduce.
I think if I was to change one thing, it would probably be more giving teachers time with literature. And I don't know what the answer is there. But I think, you know, we have a professional responsibility to stay up to date with the literature, but we have so many other professional responsibilities as well, and there isn't time in the day.
Yeah.
So it would be amazing if there was some way of, you know, teachers just getting to sit down with a few books and exploring them. I also think funding for books, because, you know, I know myself, I spend a huge amount of my own money on children's literature, but that's because I love it. But you can't expect everyone to do that. So I think they're probably the two main things if I was to think about children's literature in schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, giving teachers an opportunity to actually get off the ground without having to sacrifice too much personal time and their personal resources, you know. And I know there's a certain amount of that involved, but it's a big ask because there's lots of subjects in the curriculum, you know.
I'm going to put you on the spot here now.
Great.
But I think you're going to nail the assignment. Junior and senior infants, if you were to pick a book there.
Oh my goodness. Junior and senior infants. Definitely anything by John Classen. So, you know, I Want My Hat Back. Mm. Any of those books, they're so funny. They're so deadpan. I think children love them. They're just a little bit, you'd enjoy them as an adult because you kind of, you'd understand the deadpan humour, but they're simple and, you know, there's lots of, I suppose, potential for cross-curricular work with the younger children too. So I love John Classen, but I'd recommend him up to school as well. So
first and second class?
First and second class. Who would I recommend or what would I recommend? See, I find it very hard to put, I suppose, an age on books because what I would use with the first and second class, I'd probably use in a different way with sixth. But Oliver Jeffers is immediately coming to mind. I love Lost and Found. I think that's a gorgeous book.
Yeah.
There's so much potential for a rich discussion there. You can read it on one level in a really simple, here's the plot. But there's also a lot to be gleaned from the illustrations.
And if we were to move into the senior classes then, are there any little text novels or nuggets that you're just like, I love going back to this one?
There are so many.
Yeah.
I love Matt de la Penna's work. So The Last Stop of Market Street, Milo Imagines the World. I think Matt de la Penna's work is really socially conscious.
Mm.
And most of his work is actually illustrated by Christian Robinson. So It's quite playful, but then when you actually get into the crux of it, the language is really sophisticated. Yeah. So fabulous for teaching figurative language. And then with fifth and sixth, I love things by like the Phan brothers. I love Anthony Brown's work. I remember one of my sixth classes going, there's a real Stranger Things. Is that what it's called?
Stranger Things.
And I was going, I don't know what that is, but I'll take your word for it.
They're too cool.
Yeah, I'm just too cool for that. I'm unplugged.
And if there was one picture book every primary teacher should own, Emma, what do you think it should be? And I know we're really narrowing it down now, but I suppose I'm asking this thinking of like if a student teacher was about to go out in their first school placement or even their second or final, what is one that you think is just like, make sure you put that in for your first year of teaching or your first school placement?
I don't think you can go wrong with After the Fall by Dan Santash. It's a story about what happened to Humpty Dumpty after the fall.
Wow.
It is so rich. And if you were looking at exploring visuals with children, that book is perfect. But again, it's one of those books where you can read it on different levels. So you could read it to an infant class and they'd enjoy it. And you can read it to your sixth class, or even in my case, to BEDs, and they love it too.
Brilliant. And what would you say is one book that beautifully promotes empathy and belonging?
I would say The Invisible Boy by Trudy Ludwig. It's about a boy who is being bullied, or not being bullied, but I suppose he feels sidelined. And again, the visuals do a lot of work because he is kind of shown in grayscale. And then the more he's included, the more he's represented in colour.
Oh,
it's gorgeous.
Beautiful.
So beautiful.
Okay, so that is one to add to the collection.
Add to cart.
Add to cart, click. One recently published children's book that deserves more attention.
I love The Future Book by Mac Burnett. So it is completely ridiculous. Like, it's absurd. I read it the other day and I was reading it to my fiance and I couldn't get the words out. I was laughing so much. But we were talking about how, even though it's a bit cracked, it's kind of a bit of a commentary on the current sort of TikTok vernacular that children are swimming in. So there's a part of the book where they say, in the future, we don't say goodbye. We say, forgive me, Susan, or something like that. So it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it makes you think about some of the things that, you know, the sort of vocal sort of stims that children are adopting from the likes of TikTok and adults.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, when you kind of stop and think about it, oh God, why do we do that? That's a bit silly.
Clock it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But I just think it's a really interesting catalyst for that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
And again, the illustrations are fabulous.
Amazing. One book that you return to again and again.
One book that I return to again and again. I think I love the Phan brothers' work. And again, I think that's because I'm so into visual literacy. So I love the Barnabas Project. It's kind of a story again about identity and self-acceptance. And it's just really cool and quirky. It doesn't follow a sort of traditional plot line. And I love anything that kind of veers outside of the box.
Yeah.
You know, it's important that children see there's more than one arc to a story.
Fantastic. And one book that completely surprised you. It sounds like that one you just, as you were talking to your fiancé about.
I think Stuck by Oliver Jeffries is the book that I would say completely surprised me.
Why?
I remember I used to always see it in the infant library in my school. And for a while, I kind of overlooked it just because it became background noise. It was always there. And it was when I read it and I went, oh my God, there is that nod to The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein. The visuals are doing so much of the work. I couldn't believe I'd overlooked it because it was so rich.
Yeah.
Do you know? So I'm looking forward to using that again with my older class.
One hidden gem that more teachers should know about.
I would say Cush Game, Cush Gaming by Claire Dunn. It's an Irish language book, but it is gorgeous. So I actually work with Claire in DCU and she is just one of the most creative, joyful people you could ever wish to meet. And the book exudes that. But it's about a mouse called Alicia. And I would just recommend, the teachers.
And is it Osquelga or is it just the title? It's Osquelga.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
But again, it's so accessible.
Yeah.
Beautiful images. It's illustrated by Anita Foley. It's really a gorgeous book. Definitely.
That's brilliant. Just to have a Guelga recommendation as well. So, okay, so staff room essentials. On shelf, the bookshelf. Emma, what book are you reading at the moment?
I'm such a teacher. I'm actually at the moment working through a list of potential novels for the coming year. So I'm reading Stuck by Paura Kenny. Becky Long actually recommended it to me. I'm really enjoying that. But my adult books are just, I don't know where they are.
Do you have no adult books? No.
I do, but I really, again, I just really want to know the books that I might be reading.
Yeah.
And the last book I read was, I reread Orbital by Samantha Harvey. I adore that book. I think it's just beautifully written.
I love getting these recommendations. I'm about to dive into The Beekeeper of Aleppo now in the next week.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Oh, it's a fabulous book.
I'm just bracing myself because I've heard it's quite emotional. Yeah. So, yeah.
But I love a cry.
On Busca Urlishi, The Toolbox, what's one classroom resource you couldn't live without or that will be in Miss Farraher's classroom next year?
Loads and loads and loads of cardboard and sellotape. Yeah. So for the kids, and then for myself, a glue gun. I love a glue gun.
Yeah.
The kids, any kids I've taught, if they remember anything about me, Miss Farraher loves her glue gun.
What do you do with all the cardboard?
And I have a maker space in my classroom so that children can represent maybe their writing if they want to make something. Now, not always, but it's an option that we have there. I do a lot of project work and I like to do lots of little STEM activities. And then it's an open invitation to create as well.
Beautiful.
You know? So it's kind of like an open Barney bag.
Yeah.
That's where the inspo came from.
Oh, I want to be in your class. Fisrucht, what is making you curious right now in education?
I think the new curriculum. I'm really excited to see how things look. Now, I'm a huge advocate for sort of playful learning, and I love the idea of the sort of competency-based learning and integration. Yeah. I feel in a way maybe I've been doing that. A lot of us have been doing that already, but I'm excited to build on it and excited to see where it brings us.
Foulam, what's something you've learned recently that has changed your thinking?
I'm going to have to say anything that we did on the EdD around policy analysis. I don't think I'll ever read a policy in the same way again, but I'm actually interested in reading.
We get
reading.
The shivers in our spine when you say that word.
Well, this is not an ad for the EdD.
No.
But no, I've really found, I suppose, my thinking around, you know, what's presented to us as teachers.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what I would think is interesting. You know,
really
we have to read those policies carefully and see what's being said, what's not being said.
Yeah.
I wish I had a more exciting answer than that, but we were in the trenches there for the year.
And we've come out of the
trenches. We enjoyed it.
But it has. You know, you've hit the nail on that. Like, it absolutely changed my thinking as well. Like, you know, what's left unspoken as well. So the last bell, every episode finishes with the same question. If every teacher listening today remembered just one thing from our conversation, Emma, going forward into the academic year, what would you hope it would be?
I would say that if they are working with a picture book in the classroom, just to slow down and talk about the images. And I know I'm constantly talking about that, but, you know, use your visual thinking strategies. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you see? Why do you say that? And what more can we find? It's based on work by Abigail Housen and Philip Yenewine. And there's lots of resources online to support teachers to have those conversations. But just slow down, look at the images and let the children talk.
Yeah, excellent advice. We're going to go to our quick fire round, this or that. Emma, picture books or novels?
Picture books.
Library or bookshop?
Library.
Hardcover or paperback?
Hardcover.
Reading aloud or silent reading?
Reading aloud.
Roald Dahl or Julia Donaldson?
Can I say neither?
What? I love Roald Dahl and Julia Donaldson.
I do like both. I just feel there's probably, I'd probably lean towards others.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. No comment, we'll say, for that one. Fiction or non-fiction?
Oh, that's really hard. Both. Can I say both?
Of course you can. Bookmark or dog ear the page?
Bookmark.
I'm a dog ear girl. Morning reading or bedtime reading?
Bedtime reading.
Tea or coffee?
I want to say both. Tea.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
Mountains or the sea?
The sea.
Kindle or physical books?
Physical books.
Agreed. Pen and notebook or digital notes?
Pen and notebook. I love a notebook.
So do I.
Yeah.
Are you a doodler?
Yeah. Oh my God. I'll show you now.
Podcasts or audiobooks?
Audiobooks.
One word that describes great teaching?
Holistic.
Absolutely. In three words, how would your friends describe you?
Type A. type B and warm. And I'm sorry, because I know they're not proper words, but it's the only way I could describe myself.
Oh my gosh. Emma, thank you so much for joining us for this very first episode of FISROC's August Phylum. We have loved having you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such an honour to be the first guest and to chat to you and to catch up. Thank you so much. And best of luck. I can't wait to listen to the rest of the episodes.
Thank you so much, Emma. If you enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love you to share the podcast with a colleague or friend. Until next time, stay curious, keep learning, and never underestimate the power of a good story. Slangafol.